Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Horrible Podcast. Working double time on the seduction line, I'm Brian.
I'm Tyler.
And I'm Drew.
And with us tonight is a very special guest, our writer for our serial killer section on thehorriblepodcast.com, Lona. Welcome, Lona.
Thank you, sir.
If you have listened to other episodes, you know she's been on. We need a woman's point of view for.
Do we?
Well, we need
I think
for,
we always do.
We need a woman's point of view when it comes to stalkers. I think we had you
check
on for a stalker.
Yeah. Got that.
What was the other one we had you on for that we...
The I don't remember.
Something with witches? Like haunted something?
I think you're right, Drew, but replace that W with a B and then we have...
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So, past and future guest Lona is on, and for a really awesome movie. So, can't wait to talk The Babadook.
The Babadook.
All right, so you can follow us on Twitter at HorriblePcast, right, Brian? Or
yeah.
Email us at wolfmansgotnards@thehorriblepodcast.com. What else do we have? We're streaming live on Ustream, so if you guys tune in at 7-ish p.m. Eastern Standard Time, depending on technical issues.
Or 7:30.
Or 7:30, you know, we're like the cool kids to the party. We're late to our own podcast, even.
Yeah, we say 7, then we show up at 7:30.
That's right, because we don't want to be the first. It's never cool to be the first people there. Like, who is the first person there?
It's where the Guns N' Roses podcast.
Yeah, like, we want Canadians to riot whenever they show up to our podcast.
Maybe we won't even show up.
Yeah, who knows? We might just, we'll just turn it on and walk away. We'll drop the fucking mic.
That's how I leave my lovers, usually.
The futzing
I turn
mic
them on and walk away.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's perfect.
Right, exactly.
You're lovers. I also like that you're like a Spanish Lothario. You're just like, my lovers.
Much, I leave my lovers, much like this woman in the Babadook with a case of blue lips.
Gross. So gross. So a couple of plugs this week.
Hair replacement therapy.
Hair replacement therapy? Yeah. So
plugs.
There's actually a billboard halfway between Chattanooga and Nashville that is like, it's skin pigmentation, but it's supposed to be for where you're losing your hair, and they it's like from bald to cool, and it's a guy who has like, it's a white, like a very thuggish looking white guy who has a shaved head, but it just looks like really bad Photoshop.
Oh God.
So if they could sponsor the podcast, that would be amazing.
Hey, things I don't have to worry about that.
I wonder why there aren't more weird podcast like advertisements.
Sponsors?
Yeah, like more weird sponsors. It can be expensive to sponsor a podcast. Like,
all we're asking for is someone to buy us some cool like gear.
Yeah, I don't think that's very expensive.
I mean, what's the thing? Like, we need some webcams. We need some
Webcams, right?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Like parachute pants or something.
That would be awesome.
I'd be fine with parachute pants too.
All right, cool.
You'd never see it, but it would be there. We could say right now we're wearing parachute pants. Lona can't because you can kind of, and Drew, you can kind of see his jeans, but me and Brian.
Luckily, my gut's covering that. So
Brian is in parachute pants.
I'm rocking some sweet denim.
I'm in it right now.
So beyond the normal things that we do on social media, in addition to the podcast, I also have written words together. Over 100,000, and I'm going to be putting them out as a collection called a book. These are things that people used to, like, they'd run their eyes over words and then make sense of them. People don't really do that as much anymore, but I decided to jump into the antiquated world of book writing. So my novel, Boogie House, will be coming out on December the 13th, 2014.
I did pre-ordered that it.
Yeah. Brian, how about you?
I'm waiting for a free copy. I'm a fucking
Lona?
Friend.
Thanks, Brian. I appreciate your support.
You're welcome.
So anyway, no, it's a book I wrote that will be a part of a series, and it's a sort of a supernatural detective thing that I'm doing. So check it out. You can search for it on Amazon. It's not the first thing named Boogie House, but it's below some really bad white funk records from the 70s. So I'm very proud of that.
Oh, shit. Hey, that's what I ordered.
Maybe you did. Maybe.
Boogie House.
Boogie House. Ding, 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 ding. Boogie House. So that's my plug. I will probably be talking about it for the next few weeks until it comes out, and then we will never hear about it again. So that's it. Now on to the
Babadook. You know what? Fuck that. I think you should promote it every chance you get, right?
Okay, sure. Yeah.
From also, here, it's under T. Blake Brady.
Yeah, Brad. Like my username on Twitter. It's Braddy. You've literally known me for years, and you still mispronounce my last name.
I misspell our buddy Shannon's last name all the time. He's like, I've known you for 25 years. Hey, you know? So, there's just some things that aren't important to me.
Yeah, I guess not. And like names? Pronouncing like, them.
Hey, there's Lona. People. Stepping in there for the first time.
Color commentary. It's like the movie Major League. Bob Uecker does all of the talking. Hey, they don't call him the best color commentator in the business for nothing, folks. Well, Lona, why don't you tell us what your perspective on the Babadook is and was before we completely derailed it with my nonsense? Why did you decide to be in this movie? Like, talk about this movie specifically?
Because I'm pretty sure that my child was the impetus for the film, which seems is like flattering and unsettling, like most of the things that happened to me. You're like watching it and you're like, that sounds like my kid. Oh, that sounds like my kid.
It is your child.
Let's just say that when I was watching this film, the first thing I did was, oh my God, I had to tell Lona how much like this kid is like her kid. That was my first.
I believe the way you told me actually was, this movie's going to fuck you up.
I was like, this movie is going to fuck your mind.
Yeah. What was your overall impression of it? Brian, you have a special connection to it because of the Frightening Ass Film Festival.
That's right. You talking to me?
Yeah, man. I'm sorry. Brian.
Yeah. So I was kind of hip to this a few months ago, and we were told we were trying to get it for the Frightening Ass Film Festival. And I only actually watched it the morning of the Frightening Ass Film Festival. I'd had it for a while. I was like, I should probably watch this before we have this little film festival, so I know what I'm talking about. But yeah, I watched it, and sitting in the, I was just laying in the bed at Shannon's house with my headphones on, watching this film, and I was like, oh my God, this film worked on me in a bunch of different ways that I did not expect it to. I think I expected more of a, like, Jeepers Creepers kind of horror film, where it was like this creature that was haunting right. these people's house. I didn't expect it to hit, like, that note of being a parent. You're like, oh, shit. This kid may be worse than the Babadook.
He's the real horror of this movie.
Yeah, this kid is the horror of this movie.
I'm waiting for that.
The
kid is not that bad.
He's pretty bad.
Gets pretty rough.
I mean,
at some points.
I think he's a kid. He doesn't know any other way to act.
Doesn't
that's
he?
True. I mean, that is absolutely true.
If you were like seven and a whole bunch of weird shit was happening in your house, would you just be like, oh, this is cool?
Let's preface it with, this is not a, it's an Australian film, which, and it also showed it also showed a very Eastern European side of Australia. Like, as I was watching, I was like, are you sure this is Australia? Because I don't see any amazing, like, beaches or beautiful
spiders.
Sharks.
Like it set in the late 50s, early 60s.
It did.
Is what it really seemed like. So is that Australia today?
Is that what it looks like now?
Yeah,
like they're that far behind?
Yeah. I couldn't figure out. At times, I couldn't figure out if the movie was modern or not because of that.
That's a good point. There was no technology in it. That's for sure.
I was going to say, there was no internet. No one was Googling
the albums, Babadook. Didn't they? Those records.
Oh, no. You know what? She does say, go watch your DVD.
She does. Yeah, that's right.
I mean, I think part of the allure of this movie is that it feels like a 70s flick in a lot of different ways. Like, it has a very 70s kind of possessed child sort of exorcist omen quality to it that I really enjoyed. Not only that, but like, maybe that is the way that we can sidestep the like shitty aspects of technology and how they've ruined horror movies. Because if you just ignore cell phones, you don't have to like have the convenient, oh my God, I have no signal thing. Like, if you just, from the very beginning of the movie, if you don't build a world where cell phones are like a possibility, then you don't have anything you have to encounter.
I mean, I think it's fine in a movie like this. I don't think you could get away with it trying to make a modern slasher kind of idea. Because if you're sitting amongst modern teenagers, I think you'd have to explain away that it's either they don't have access to it or, you know, it's set in the 70s or something of that nature.
I agree with that. But like, this isn't a slasher sort of, you know what I mean?
Certainly not. No, I'm agreeing with your point. I'm just saying I don't think it's a way to get out of, you know, the technology jail that horror is kind of in with some ways for everything. But no, it worked perfect with this movie, I think, because I never even thought about it. It never even occurred that there should be.
Yeah, I didn't really recognize that there wasn't anything going on. Like, this kid was not playing an iPad. That's the woman's problem.
See, I thought about the phones, though. I thought about cell phones. When the mom put the phone cord, I was like, why doesn't the kid just get the mom's cell phone?
Right.
Well, the thing that did it, that pulled me out was when the kid was in the car and he wasn't playing his iPad and he was talking to her. I was like, what is this kid doing?
Talking, was he ever really talking in this movie, or was he screaming with every breath?
Mommy, the Vala duck. She was saying it, mommy.
It was really unsettling. It's.
I really did feel so bad for the mom. I really had a very... Yeah. My sympathies went out to her.
I felt bad for the kid.
Why? All right, okay. I shouldn't say it like that. Why?
Yeah, the serious
question.
Right,
because everyone was so nice. Because the poor little child. Everyone was mean to that kid.
Yeah, he but we don't...
His own.
We don't see the, like... 16 hours a day that this child is awful to everyone around him. It reminds me of that movie, We Need to Talk About Kevin. This child is not entirely dissimilar from that child. And yes, he's had a hard life, but also that doesn't make it any easier on the people who have to deal with him.
I mean, no, and yeah, I agree with you. The idea that, and I mean, the mother had a horrible time, but the idea though that she was still so hung up on her husband's death does make her a problematic character at that point. Yeah.
6 years later, get over it, lady.
Well, the sister says that at one time. She's like, it's been 7 years. She doesn't say it like that, but that's my closest approximation of that accent.
Yeah, the sister doesn't come off much better, although she is justified at the point that she gets really angry after he does push her daughter out of
that
a
was
tree.
Yeah,
but that little kid was being a shit. I would have shoved her out of the treehouse,
too.
It
reminded me of those times at Christmas when I was really excited about Christmas, but then I got so excited that I did something that hurt my sister, and then all of a sudden everybody was down on me like, oh, great, Brian, you ruined Christmas by punching your sister in the face. I'm glad you liked that.
I don't know, man. Yeah, I was really preoccupied with how I would have dealt with all of this as a parent. Like, I don't sympathize with children in movies because I guess
that's
I just don't.
I thought this would be a good combo of like two people that didn't have kids and two people that did have kids to kind of have that talk about what you saw versus what we saw in that film. I do understand what Lona was saying as far as she felt bad for the kid because you know, in most cases where kids make shit up, it just made up. But there was seriously a fucking creature called the Babadook haunting this kid. And the other thing, too, is like, if I walked out Saturday morning, if I woke up and my kid was in the garage with a saw and shit, I would be livid. Yeah. I'd be, who taught you how to use this?
I was impressed.
That was one thing I wish we dealt with more. Like, all his weapon as a character that we didn't get that. We saw that he had it, and it was pretty awesome, but we never understood why, really, I guess.
You still there, Todd?
Yeah, we're having technical difficulties right now.
Video off or something?
Yeah, the video's messed up. Edit. But anyway, keep talking. I'll work with the video while you guys work on it. No, yeah, it'll be fine. It's at 1941.
On our side?
We're good. No, we're good.
All right.
So, yeah, keep talking. We haven't really talked about the actual movie itself, like what the Babadook is about. We've talked about how we feel about it, but we haven't really encountered the movie itself.
So a single mom and her son are, I guess, I won't say visited, are they find a strange book called Mr. Babadook in the kid's bookshelf. I mean, up to that point.
There are issues before that, though.
There are issues before that, mainly the kid.
Right.
So they find this book called Mr. Babadook, and it kind of explains how this, the more you read it, the more it becomes part of you kind of thing going on. Like if you, and the book seems to be foreshadowing the things that are going to happen in that house. The wife, she's not a wife anymore. The mom is freaked out by it, obviously, as I would be.
But she wasn't freaked out when she saw the book on the shelf that she'd never seen before.
She asked him. She's like, Did you just run to the store
and get this by yourself?
Yeah, and then she's like, okay, well, let's just read it.
I couldn't tell you what books are on my kid's shelves.
But you have someone else who might buy them for him as well.
I mean, I know all the books in Noah's room.
Oh, by heart, I'm just a bad parent. Every one of them?
Is what?
Lona, you know all of them? You're aware of
right
all of
now,
the books? At this point,
I know in a few years I won't know the ones that are like under his mattress.
Nope.
But right now,
or in a musty sewer drain.
Or I guess probably he'll be using the iPad for that. Will
yeah,
the
iPad.
Under the bed?
One day you're going to turn on your iPad, and there will be he will have forgotten to delete the history. And there will be things on there that will curdle your soul.
See, I can't wait for that. I can't wait to see like the search history where he's just like got like butts and like all those sort of like weird things that little kids.
Oh, that's so adorable that he'll be looking for butts. I think that's adorable. Butts. Yes, butts are what you're gonna see. It's gonna be so adorably butty.
Is what he'll start with.
We'll see. Kids grow up so fast now. He's probably already at butts, Lona. He's going to move well beyond that at Ms. Banter, and it's going to be bad.
Oh my God. Like the things that I didn't see until I was like 30 years old, like they're accessible now.
Yeah. We're going to have to, like, it's bad. The internet is going to make things for kids. I mean, imagine what it's going
to
be like in 15 years when
kids
are over porn.
Really watch myself and what I'm looking at too. Like, I'll
delete
have to
your history.
There's a whole folder in my computer. I'll have to delete. And there's also is a folder in my bookmarks that I'll have to delete.
But I don't think so. I think that's like the traditional stumbling upon your father's porn collection. That's what it is now.
God, I have great memories of that.
There you go.
Yeah, but God, there's a big difference.
Take that away from him.
Like, but see, there's the thing. The internet makes everything so like personalized that there's a big difference between like a magazine, which is like widely available and everybody can like, it's like, oh, everybody wants to see this versus like the very specific thing that your dad is looking at right now. Like, that's very hyper specific. So that makes it way more uncomfortable.
This is my dad's fetish.
That's awful. That's my fetish.
Do you want to try, like, just quickly, do you guys want to see, like, there's something, my video scene, can you guys see me on your screen?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why I can't see your video. Did it accidentally turn off? Or live streamers right now is just my face because the video. There we go. Hey, the video returned. What happened? I wonder.
I clicked the video button.
No, but I'm okay.
It turned off on its own, and no one had done anything.
It was the Babadook.
It's the Babadook.
Babadook, mommy. The Babadook.
All right, so I'm going back to the side-by-side shot. Viewers,
guys, this is how sausage is made. You're watching podcast made.
You're watching live sausage?
You're watching NPR presents live sausage.
So I think that the video's back on, so I think that the live stream will work again.
C-SPAN presents live sausage.
This is how, I mean, until we get it like streamlined, this is how it's going to go. So I think people understand.
Why get it streamlined?
Well, I mean, even if you look at, like if you go to any Microsoft conference where they're unveiling some new Microsoft thing and it's in front of literally thousands and then online millions of people and then it completely craps out. That kind of shit happens when people are figuring out technology.
We're almost like Microsoft, guys.
We are on par with Microsoft.
That's what I just took away from Tyler's comment.
Based on our like the level of audience to who we are the Microsoft of our exact market, which is just us. So that
numerically, yeah. Proportionally.
I don't mean to compare us specifically to Microsoft.
I like to compare ourselves to Apple's. Like, there have been others before us, but we took their recipe and just made it better.
Exactly.
Are you talking
about apples or what? Like apple pie?
Yeah, Apple doesn't do the thing. Apple doesn't do things first. They just do it better.
Right.
Right.
All
those podcasts are 3 hours. We took it down to an hour.
Exactly. Done. That's
and change. Sometimes it's 45 minutes.
Exactly.
Sometimes
you never
it's horns and it's 30 minutes because technology fucks us in the ass.
So as far as like, one of the things I love that is really needs to be said about this movie is that it does a lot with scares without, you never actually really see the Babadook. And I love that about this movie that it manages, like most movies that try to do this end up being really boring. What was the Christmas movie that we did that was like really not tense at all? Where we don't get to see the frozen Santa and Satan.
Rare Exports.
Yeah, like this movie manages to have a real sense of tension without ever really showing the monster almost ever. I mean, until like the very end and only in this sort of like dark shadowy glimpse. Like this movie managed to do something that most horror movies never managed to accomplish.
Yeah, it really gets you on an emotional level with the kid and the mom that you feel so worn out like she is by.
Yeah.
It's like the movie, isn't it Christopher Nolan did Insomnia, right?
Mm-hmm.
With Al Pacino. Like by by 3/4 of the way through that movie, you feel as fucked up as Al Pacino does by the insomnia, by the your mind is in that mindset of like you're in seeing things. And this movie, that's the same way too. It's that you were so worn down just by this woman, like her face and her actions, that you're like, just go to sleep. That's all you want to do is see her just sleep.
Why can't you go to sleep?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
the point where she drugs him.
Which leads to one of my favorite lines by the kid to the, I guess their Australians version of D-Facts.
D-Facts.
I'm just tired from the drugs that mummy gives me.
I think that this movie takes a more philosophical approach to how it's going to get at you with its scares, because most of our movies is just like, here's a jump, here's something that jumps out that's scary. But what this movie does is it has a philosophy. Like over the course of the movie, the audio gets sort of ramped up so that every sound becomes like really intense. And I would say that the best way to watch it is in a theater with a bunch of people, the kind of the way we did. But I would say the second best way to watch this movie is with a pair of really good headphones, because I watched it I didn't get to watch the first half at the film festival, but I watched the first half on the iPad with my headphones on, and it is such a great sound. Everything sounds, the Foley work is so good in this movie that's like the second best way I would say to watch it.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a unsettling kind of sound too. Like you're just unsettled by the whole idea of what's going on. There's a film director David Lynch for Eraserhead. There's that constant disturbing tone that goes through the whole movie that he intentionally did to make people unsettled as they watched it.
The sound design reminds me a lot of Drag Me to Hell. And I mean, that's a great kind of movie to compare this to. Like, I think that movie's really, I guess not underrated, but I don't think that people think about it, and they should, because I think it's still a really great horror movie that has a really great sound design.
I watched it once. I can't remember most of it. So
me either, but seeing it in the theater, like with the way that the sound is done and is so loud and very like like every sound is very specific and it's quiet at times. Like horror movies tend to be sort of like monotonously loud at times. Like there's always noise of some kind, whether it's like, you know, a Fall Out Boy song or whatever, before the scares. It doesn't get, like, movies don't get quiet enough. But this movie, when it's not, like, I listened to part of it tonight while running. I streamed it.
The movie?
Like on my iPhone while I was running. And it gets so quiet that I thought it was pausing, and then it would just, like, something would hit. And it's so cool the way that it sounds. Like, I think that's 2/3 of what makes this movie really great and scary.
It's always still a strength, I think, of The Strangers, is always the lack of sound. I mean, silence actually becomes like one of the main characters in that movie, is just the lack of any sound, and you're just that anticipation of what's coming because of that. You know something's coming at that point.
Brian, we need a joke. Something's coming. I caught you.
You did. I was paying too close attention to what was going on.
Yeah.
Or zoning out. One. I don't. I don't.
Trying
know.
To think of
close attention. I was too focused.
I was too into it.
I was too into the podcast at this point.
I was sitting there thinking, I was like, man, I wish Lona would say something in this podcast.
I've said several things.
Hey, there she is.
You just
were too into yourself that you didn't hear any of it.
I was like,
why you couldn't come up with that joke. And
I was like, man, I can't wait back to get back in my car and brush my hair.
Of course, your hair is pretty amazing.
Thank you. I didn't expect a compliment, but I got one.
Oh my God.
Thank you very much.
I don't know why you needed a girl tonight.
Oh my.
So Lona, tell me, I'm sort of still interested. Like, so my perspective on this was like, how does
I'm sort of still interested in you. Let's see what you got going on.
Sell me on having a conversation with you again sometime in the future.
I'm still interested in your thoughts on the difference between sort of like my perspective, which is, oh my God, that poor woman with this child, she has nothing. Like when a kid doesn't want to behave, like there is no logic that I've seen. Man, but this is from the perspective of someone who's not a parent, obviously. Like, oh, you can't logic this kid into behaving, like this specific kid. Like most kids you can. What do you think about like the parent versus the child here? Like that, I still see it as like, oh, poor mom, but you see like, oh, poor child.
So bad for the kid. like from the very beginning, just because I guess I don't know how to make it make sense. But when
you're
I
gonna
was,
have to.
Thank you.
You're gonna have to.
It's very rude to interrupt.
Don't. No pressure.
Are you done? Okay. So anyway, it was one of those things where, like, when you're watching it and like you know the mom is just so fucking exhausted.
Yeah.
And you know that the kid is just a total shithead. And I'm not saying he's not. He's a total shithead.
Okay.
But he's like 6 years old. And you think, well, this, all I kept thinking was, here is a woman who is so caught up in her own bullshit. And you know, she's thinking about her dead husband all the time.
Right.
That's real sad. And I'm real sorry for that. But it was like this whole thing where it's just, for me, that's just like parenting in a nutshell. Is like every day I wake up and I can think about all these things that are going wrong and think about all these things that are absolutely terrifying just in general about having a kid.
Yeah.
And my kid is sitting in the car and he won't stop fucking singing songs from commercials and he just keeps going and it's 7.5 minutes in and I want to scream at him the way the mom screams at that kid. And 88% of the time I swallow it back and just go cry in a bathroom after I take him to school or something. But I just, the way the kid acted, it's like, what other chance did he have?
Right. Actually,
No, I'm just laughing.
I agree with
I'm
you.
Just thinking about like if we had the if like, the mom didn't like go crazy on the kid and just like all we kept doing was cutting back to her at work crying in the bathroom. What a different movie that would be.
A documentary about my life. That'd be fine.
I actually agree with you thinking about it in that way. Like we are only given, like we are sort of manipulated into feeling sympathy for the mom for most of the movie until the end when she changes and you're like, oh crap, now, oh, this kid is
this
like,
kid wasn't making things up.
He's not utterly defenseless, but that's kind of how you feel like, oh my God, I want to protect this kid because he doesn't really understand. I mean, he understands, but he's so young. So I actually agree with you that the mom was really self-absorbed by her own problems,
like
grief.
Take that idea, what Tyler just said, is that he is really young, too. And, you know, I'm guilty of sometimes wondering why my kid doesn't understand something by putting my, 40 years of life experiences onto him. It's like, why don't you understand this concept?
Well, yeah, you have moments with your kid where you're like, I cannot believe I have to actually explain this to another person.
And then you're like, oh, wait, you're only 8 years old, 9 years old. I guess I do have to explain this to you because this is not how humans act.
Well, then this poor kid also has to deal with the fact that, I mean, this has been his entire childhood has been this. I mean, he's so needy. But,
well, I mean, he's never
reason.
Had anything. Well, he's never even had a birthday.
Right.
And you know, been, I mean, like, what a shitty mom.
Yeah.
Because she's been so involved in her sadness about.
That's good.
I mean, let's face it, she blames him. It's that weird reverse. Usually, you know, of course, you get the mother who dies in childbirth and the father who, you know, who holds it against the child. And then in this, it's the opposite. She blames him because he's the reason they were going to the hospital and he's the reason that the dad's dead, and she'd rather have the dad is what it's what it looks like, even though she can't admit that to herself at the same time because she's not a bad person and she'd feel awful about that. And then the kid has turned out how he has because he needs something more than she's given him and she won't.
Well, I can't defend this movie now. Like, I'm thinking of all the scenes in the movie. Lona, you've totally turned me around on it.
Basically, all it is a cautionary tale about having sex.
Also, if the husband died the way he is portrayed as passing away with the head getting chopped in, I was like, holy shit, that's ridiculously rough.
Gruesome.
Yeah.
Like, I'm thinking about the scene where she tries to masturbate.
That seems hilarious.
Blue lips.
And the kid runs in, you think like, oh man, that bastard won't give her a second. Like, in my original watching, like the first time I watched, I was like, he's always in her shit. Like, she can't do anything without him like messing it up. But now I'm thinking like what she does as a response is to just like kick him out and say like, go to bed, it doesn't matter. Like, what matters is my bullshit. That's so, you're right.
She did that. As soon as she did that though, I was like, well, this must be the first time she's ever tried to do this since he was born. Or she would have known that was going to happen.
Right.
In the first place. Like, you have to wait and go in there, do like the mirror to their mouth to make sure that they are breathing deep, and then silently creep. I mean, just
yeah.
She opened a drawer; it made too much noise. It was gone.
Be like the rest of us and have to just go into the bathroom and masturbate because you can lock
the door.
I don't
want to go in this territory, Jesus.
Well, you'd already seen though that they didn't quite go as far into as it looked like they were going to, but there was a weirdness about the way that he would sleep in her bed with her, I thought.
Oh, no, that's not weird.
No, that just happens.
That's how my kid sleeps on me, too.
No, yep. I'm not taking that side of it away from it. But the way it's filmed and shot, though, is
true.
What I'm
like,
saying. I mean,
like there was
the
like, well, you're
the
right, you're right.
The way it's done in the movie is shown. I think it's filmed in a way that you know that is lends it some sort of strangeness to it.
That like that one scene where there's like some squeezing of some skin going on. Right.
Because it could definitely have been done in a way where it makes it look, oh, this is just normal, you know, kids take over the bed kind of thing. But it's definitely
like an overhead shot of the kid like pushed her off to one side.
It's definitely not shot.
The other morning I woke up and I woke up with Jackson's hand in my beard, not just like touching it, but like up into it and holding it. I was like, oh, well, this is my life.
That is your life. You could be like the beginning of a movie about parenthood. Like that's the beginning of those movies is like parent wakes up at 6 a.m. hands in beard like that.
This is 39.
Yeah, you could reboot the TV show 30-something because that's what it sounds like.
Oh my God.
I refuse to watch that show.
Don't. It will send you into a... Like, don't.
Oh yeah, every time I thought about it, I was like, oh no, I'm not watching this because I will go into a depression spiral.
I can't because I already have enough people sitting there confusing me with Timothy Busfield when we run into... Like, watch something at a time. I was like,
that's right. That's the villain from Field of Dreams, right? The one that tries to take the land from Kevin Costner?
God, I don't remember.
Is he in Field of Dreams? Timothy Busfield?
There's a ginger in there.
I just didn't remember that. Okay.
John Cusack?
No, is John
Shoeless
Cusack
Joe.
A ginger?
He's Shoeless Joe.
John Cusack?
8 Men Out.
It's an 8 Men Out, yeah.
Who plays Shoeless Joe Jackson in Field of Dreams? Ray Liotta, that's right.
That's right.
God.
For the place now.
Hey, Dad, 80s, you want to play some catch?
80s baseball references.
I never thought a baseball movie would make me cry the way Field of Dreams did.
I didn't cry at it.
Not even when James Earl Jones did his big speech about America has rolled on like a steamroll. Yeah. That's what got me. I was
Mark.
Like, this... Yeah, that's what got me when I was watching it.
I was like 7 when it came out. I didn't think movies were.
I was 29.
Yeah. So see the difference there. Like you had grown into manhood. I was but a wee little. I was basically Sam from this movie.
I had grown into manhood. Meanwhile, manhood had just grown into you.
Mommy.
I also have a little bit of that kid like. In my childhood, I mean, it reminds me of the time I've told on the podcast where I tried to swing from a branch on a pecan tree like Tarzan and landed and dislocated my elbow. And then I wouldn't let anybody touch me because I was afraid it would hurt more. So I hid under the carport and like ran away like Mowgli, just like spider legging it.
Febrile seizure in the carport.
Like my arm just dangling and it wouldn't work. But I was like, don't touch me. I can imagine like
Tyler
I'm very
a,
much like
a,
him.
Just a feral child running around.
I think I was even in my underwear. That could have been like a fault. Like maybe I was trying to be Mowgli. I was just like, I'm gonna,
you know, that's
bare necessities.
I am going to take this film to my Thanksgiving trip to show my mom and see how this affects her.
It may like I just
because she apparently I'm told that every time that my kid does something bad, I'm always told that I was way worse. I'm always like, oh, you were way worse. Oh, Brian, you were horrible.
I can see that.
One time, your grandmother came to my house and said, Darcy, there's something wrong with that boy. You need to get him checked out. She didn't have a southern accent. That was more like, Darcy, there's something wrong with that boy. You need to get it checked out. Do you got a Bud Light?
You need to get it checked out.
You need to get it checked out. I just watched this thing on 60 Minutes about a feral wolf child. Pretty sure that's your son.
You kind of look like a feral wolf child right now.
You also had the beard then, right?
I did have a beard then. Mm-hmm. I did. I had a Beatles haircut.
Of course.
So, yeah. So, it was the hair was just always there.
What'd you think about the pacing of the movie? I thought the movie, like, it's slow, but in a really great way. Like, every scene seems to build up to this sort of weird... strange conclusion. Like I don't think that it's particularly well written because of the way the climax happens, but it's still a really interestingly done sort of like a build up.
No, I mean I would certainly agree with you there. It was something I was dreading a little bit as I watched it. It's like, oh, this is gonna get kind of slow and boring at some point. It just looks like it's going to be that movie, but it never Mm-mm. it just wasn't. Like it did keep building in a way that I found myself drawn in, and I think a lot of it came down to the characters. That, like, I was interested in what's going to happen to these people. Like, I mean, they felt a lot more real up until she has her, you know,
meltdown
possession.
Yeah, you want to eat something? Go eat some shit. Doesn't she say that at one point?
The bugs all come out of the from behind the fridge.
Ugh. Oh, and she's lying. Well,
and when she jumps on the frame and starts kicking the door, I was like,
"Oh, that was amazing." Well, a lot of people don't like movies like this where you can't really identify. Like, all of the characters are kind of not bad, but they're hard to identify with, and the mom certainly is like that. I kind of like feeling sorry for characters in movies, especially horror movies. I like watching the movie and going like, man, I just really, like when the sister just completely bitches her out, like I still felt sorry for her, even though it's been a really long time. Like the sister was really mean to her. Even, I mean, I guess up to the point.
Eat your baby.
I mean, I guess even up to the point where he pushed the kid out of the treehouse. Like, what makes this movie interesting, like you say, is the characters, but also it's their actions. It's the things that they do. It's not, they don't just like internalize everything. They almost externalize everything, and that makes it more interesting. Like, they act on the world. Like, the kid doesn't just go like, I'm a sad, not dad kid. He pushes people out of treehouses, and that's awesome.
A question becomes, I think, so Where does the Babadook come from? Like, what? Like, does it seek them out because of the sadness? Is there some sort of, you know, is it some sort of like creature like that feeds on? Feels like some sort of Neil Gaiman-esque kind of.
I thought the same thing.
It does.
Creature
yeah.
that like seeks out sadness in people, and that's what it feeds off of, and it goes to them and brings its book. And
do you think it's more interesting if they just happen upon the book and it's? I don't know. I guess the book kind of appears. It just shows up.
I mean, I like that. They kind of. They barely touch on it. It's like, where did you get this from? Yeah. I did like that too. I like that there wasn't a lot of time spent explaining where the hell it all came from.
Yeah. I just like thinking about the idea of why does it choose them because they're sad, because it doesn't make them more sad. I mean, they're obviously already sad.
It does definitely remind me of Neil Gaiman. Like, that's interesting.
Well, especially when you get to the scenes where it almost has like a Burton-esque or even Dave McCown, the illustrator that did what Wolves in the Walls and stuff with him. It almost has that kind of look to it when it gets to some of the animated sequences, and it feels very, very much like that. Like
I read
that fantasy kind of world.
I thought it'd be a good idea to read Jackson the Wolves in the Walls when he was like 4. I was like, oh, it's a cute story because, you know, the humans chase the wolves. Spoiler alert, humans chase the wolves out. Wolves get scared of the people. But apparently that wasn't the case with Jackson. Every little noise that happened in the house, he's like, is that the wolves in the walls? I was like, God damn it, backfire on me.
Why do you think this movie is so successful where others are not? Like, when it comes to like explaining the premise, it's just the act. Just always British. Like, every movie would be better with like British or Australian accents.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just like we don't have to care about where the book came from. It sets that up nicely, and also like the pacing is nice without getting boring. There's something that this movie has that a lot of horror movies just do not have, I think. Drew, sorry.
Oh no, I mean, I think part of it is, I think it's always a weird thing, but I think we accept strangeness better from foreign films than we do from American ones. And so in an American film, there would have had to have been the sequence where she goes to the old bookstore where she had bought the book looking for something for her son's
birthday. Americans have to have answers.
Yeah. She would have had to have bought something for her son's birthday, and it would have been this strange book that just appeared when she was there. And she'd go back to the bookstore and ask him about the origins of it. And they'd say, what book? I've never seen this book that you're talking about.
That is
about.
Boring. Like, that's such a boring premise.
Well, they are remaking it.
The old guy she buys it from wouldn't be there when she goes back to the bookstore. No, where's the old man that owns the store? What are you talking about? Says young black guy. I own this store.
Why you got to be black?
See, there was a point just in the whole thing where I didn't even know if the book was real. And I was like, is the book just like her psychotic break?
Right, yeah.
You know, like at the end, is she going to like wake up in some hours bullshit and the kid's dead? And, you know, we don't know.
Spoiler alert.
Because, you know, she was so...
Just aww. Spoil the hours.
You know. Okay, if you've not seen
Virginia
that
Wolf dies, guys. She goes to the lighthouse. What was I going to say? Holy shit.
But that's a good point, too, is that much Lona's point about it.
Drew's also was good. Drew's was also good.
They're all good. Hey, we're a good podcast. It's all good.
It's how you're a dad.
By default, everything we say is going to be good. including the shit I say. No, you know, toot my own horn there. Is that how much of this shit is going on in the mom's head?
Yeah.
Versus what's real? Is the Babadook really?
Or is she finally bought into like the things that he believes? I mean, we see something that could, but the movie changes perspective.
Your idea of like not show, like we don't really see a Babadook. We see some shadowy things that could be the Babadook. We see some things that she sees on the ceiling that she certainly believes to be a creature, but we're not really sure what she's seeing.
Well, it's almost like she becomes the kid because, you know, kids see and think some weird shit.
Yeah.
Like, my kid has said some stuff to me that makes me really sort of like, oh, I don't know that I like being in the house with you asleep.
And knives. I don't like being in the house. Like, you can be in the house or knives can be in the house, but not both.
Let mommy show you how your new bedroom door locks from the outside. It's fine. It's fine. It's because I love you and want to keep you in here away from me.
It's my own secret little love.
But, you know, it's sort
room.
Of like that, you know,
that's kind of bad.
But, yes. I don't know. That is not the child.
It's very VC Andrews of you, Brian.
No, but you know, by the end, they've sort of switched places in terms of the parent and child.
Yeah. I also think...
But, you know, and it's sort of like, you know, who is the crazy person? Is the kid the shit or is the mom the shit? Like, you don't really have a definitive answer at all.
And we also get, like, a shift in perspective. It seems like the narrator of the movie shifts from the mom to the kid. And so the mom never really sees stuff. It's sort of like there's a slow, like... intersection that happens over, and people who are seeing the live stream get to see me use my hand acting.
3D.
So the people who
put on your glasses now.
We get to see this intersection sort of towards the end of the movie where it switches narrators almost, and like then that's when you get to see all the crazy shit is when it moves to the kid and it becomes like Home Alone meets Tim Burton, and then like that could almost also be like, oh, is it really happening? Or is this kid sort of like overlaying all of this? And finally the mom just decides to play along with it, whatever it is. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't believe that's true. I just think you could make that argument.
I like that early on. I did question, you know, you question, is the child crazy, you know, and then later on you question, is the mother crazy? But I do, what I do like is that I felt eventually though is, I did buy into the idea. The movie convinced me enough that no, there is this presence, whatever it is, that is making them both look that way, and is, you know, and is, you know, now trying to force its way into their lives. But the question is, what does it want? Like, I never even understood what it wants.
The boy, the child,
right?
Yeah, it wants child souls.
Yeah, because it's almost poltergeist in that idea too. That it's there for the innocence or something like that. Like
maybe it's the dad and it was just two really self-absorbed people who accidentally started to have a baby. He's mad he's in Ghost World. She's mad he's in Ghost World. And they're just trying to get back together. Well, it's basically a love story.
There is a ghost, a very...
It's an Australian ghost.
What we don't know is that the Babadook has been around in Australian storytellings for years. That's in their version of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. The Australian version
You saying that's true, or are you just making that point?
I'm just making that point.
Okay, just checking. It's their boogeyman.
Yeah, it's their boogeyman. It's the Babadook. We just don't know because we're over here. We're across the pond.
Uncultured.
But I think there's a lot of stuff about, I mean, that one scene where she goes downstairs and sees that it's like her book of her box of memories of the father is strewn across things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like Sam has set up a suit on the wall the dad, too. So I started wondering, too, is like...
Well, even in her bedroom, you know, when they show the shots from the bed and you look over into the right side of the room, she's got, like, the hat and there's, like, a jacket hanging on a thing and it looks like there's a person in the room the time.
I mean, I don't know. The movie does a great job of kind of blurring the lines of what is this creature, the Babadook, real? Or is this all the figments of their imaginations of them, the loss of someone they love versus... Sam never knew him, so he doesn't. Or his imaginings of what it could have been to have that is that them just both going crazy.
It's also kind of a metaphor about grief. Like this is about the toll that grief takes on you. Like it becomes the sort of monster that consumes you. Like the Babadook is kind of a metaphor for like her finally giving into the grief of all of this stuff because that's ultimately what happens. And it's what breaks it is the love of her child. So like on a very fundamental psychological level, that's what this is about. Sorry, that's it. Sorry, that was it. That was all I was saying.
That's all
I had.
So we're done?
No, so we get to the end.
Which is awesome. The scene where she swings from the rafters or the top of the door was the most amazing thing in this movie, I think.
Yeah, it really I was like, holy shit.
I know, it's like, god damn.
I just imagine myself doing that to my kid, like, you know, those moments where he has his fit and he runs in the room and locks the door. I'm like, I mean, I have a key. I'm like, I'm going to unlock the door from out here.
In the frame.
But could you imagine, like, trying to kick the door in? How fucking horrifying that would be as a kid? Jesus Christ. Cheese and crow, Mr.
Cheese and rice.
Cheesy rice. No, the end where they're out, like, things have passed and she has...
The Shaun of the Dead ending.
The vomited up the Babadook. Right. And her and Sam have made amends, but they're out in the yard collecting worms
for the Babadook. Bugs.
And turns out that she goes out, and now the Babadook is being kept in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's
almost docile, but like still like a feral animal. Like she comes downstairs, she's like, whoa, don't break my spine as you pick me up and, you know, stow me around.
I mean, it's the Shaun of the Dead ending almost, where you have this coda that is like, there is always the threat there that it will come back. They just have to sort of.
It's like the same thing you were saying with the grief, though, because mm-hmm. it's like they're going down and they're feeding it, and it's down there with like all her husband's shit.
Yeah,
and, you know, we just have to kind of keep it over here in the corner.
You so never let it go. Like this, what this movie teaches us about grief is that grief never really goes away. You just have to learn how to manage it so that it doesn't consume the both of you.
This is
what's
deep
that?
Shit.
What's that quote where they talk about? There's a hole, but you learn to walk around it.
Ooh, yeah. Uh-oh, we got a little freezing action here. I'm going to screenshot that.
Takes that person to leave your heart.
Yeah, sorry, it froze for a second, so it's just me sort of babbling for a minute. Lona, could you repeat that? There's a hole, but you learn to walk around it.
Oh my God. See, now I can't say it as eloquently as I did. No, but it's the...
It's the Extreme song. There's a hole in my heart that can only be filled by you.
That is exactly...
Wholehearted.
Oh, he's not done.
He never is. People make fun, but like, when you hear it, it's fine. When you hear it, it's fine. But when you're in the podcast, it's like, all right, we love you, Brian.
It's fine. What you've done is fine.
No, but there's a quote that someone said where they liken grief to a hole, and you know, you never fill it up. You just learn to walk around it.
Yeah.
You know where it is, even in the dark of night, so you don't fall in it when you're gonna go pee. That sort of thing.
Oh yeah, no, that is eloquent.
Assume.
When you have to go pee.
I wanted to make it my own.
No,
I didn't want to plagiarize. So.
When you piss
two roads
the
diverged.
Watch out for the grief hole. Lona Pander.
Someone please.
Grief. Yes. Yeah. We can turn that into a meme. Grief is the hole you have to avoid when you pee in the middle of the night.
Do you
want
to pee, or do you also want to break your ankle?
Miss Panter. It's a very shallow grief hole. Very shallow grief hole is like the worst Cannibal Corpse song.
Twist your ankle, not really break anything.
Mostly your pajamas are going to get dirty and you have to change. It's going to be a whole thing.
Yeah.
You're not going to get any sleep the rest of the night.
Grief is the inconvenience of pissed in pajamas. Brian said.
True. All right. I mean, I feel good about this.
I do too. I think it's a great...
It's an awesome movie. Film.
It is and one that really kind of came out of, I guess, say left field, like not really expecting...
Another hemisphere even.
Yeah.
God. You have to be on every week now. That's it.
Yeah, that joke sealed it up.
Every week.
Yeah,
this is just an audition.
Oh, yeah.
Next week, we'll be watching Audition.
It is.
Will there be a scoring?
Well, no. What the three of us are going to do now is judge like it's American Idol and give you rankings.
Do I have to go sit in my car?
No, we're going to do it right in front of you.
Oh, good. It'll be just like being at home with my family.
What I liked is like about 45 minutes in, she really opened up and started talking.
Wow, he's really on this one.
I don't even know what he means by that.
Right.
It's just him being passive aggressive. That's all.
Yeah. No, definitely see the Babadook.
It's awesome.
I know it's out on. I know that there's some VODs on right now. I know DirecTV had it on VOD, but I think it comes out later at the end of this month on iTunes.
Some VODs.
Some VOD.
POD.
So, but I know we'll get it on iTunes and all those good places at the end of the month. I know what VOD's nuts are.
God damn it.
I was trying to class up the joint. Yeah. Try not to do that.
Of course.
That's what I do. I bring some class.
Yeah, I say watch it. It's awesome.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, when I think class, I say see Brian Center.
I say what?
That's super, super.
What?
Anyway, yeah, I say see the movie. and continue to watch these live streams. We'll get them hammered out over time, I promise. It's all on me. I'll take it. It's all on me.
Yeah. It's Tyler. Tyler's the one who's like, wait, everyone wants to see our amazing faces.
They do.
I think tonight they got Drew's shoulder and Lona's shoulder.
Yeah. I'll go back and edit.
I got a text that I was supposed to just.
That's fine.
Yeah, speak into the microphone. You have to speak into the microphone.
Thank you. God.
All right, guys. We'll see you next week. I say watch the Babadook.
Go see the Babadook. Go buy T. Blake Brady's book.
Boogie House. Awesome.
Yeah. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us. Just whatever. Fucking whatever.
Social media. Just find us. If you can find this, you can find our Twitter account.
We're so tired of telling you where we are.
Brian.
Find us.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the Horrible Podcast, I am Tyler.
I'm Brian.
And I'm Drew.
I'm Lona. I didn't know if I was supposed to talk.
Well, it would have been.
Learn your place.
Just like the rest of the podcast, it would have been nice if you had. Oh, my God.
This friendship is over.
All right. We'll see you guys next time.